You're listening to littlepodcast.com.
This week on the Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast, we talk about our love of all things Game Boy, which would have done last episode if not for Nintendo's mobile DNA announcement. So there may be some anachronisms here, but that doesn't stop us from talking about Framed and Future Retro and Quarth, not to be confused with the city-state and Game of Thrones in their questionable female fashion sense. This week's episode of the Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast is sponsored by littlepodcast.com and listeners like you. To sponsor an episode, just go to littlepodcast.com, click Famicom Dojo from the drop-down, and submit your payment to PayPal. Or if you have a product you want to advertise, please email us at podcast@famicomdojo.tv. Unlike, you know who you are. Yes, we were born to play all this video games.
What you doing?
Playing some Game Boy.
Oh, you too?
Yeah.
Man, I love the Game Boy.
Yeah, right? I'm playing the Game Boy Advance specifically, so.
Game Boy Advance?
More or less.
What's that?
It's pretty much the last Game Boy that was ever made.
Oh, man. Man, do I just love the, well, you know, if you've got an Advance, you can play the same games I'm playing, can't you?
That's right. Plus everything else. Man.
Plus everything else. Wow. Man, Game Boy is a great system.
Isn't it? I have such fond memories of it as a kid. Like Nintendo Power really hyped it up for me.
Yep.
And those commercials too. And I would like go to the store and like look at all the crazy ass peripherals you could buy for it and be like, I want that frickin' like magnifying glass window speaker thing. And
oh my gosh, I forgot about those. Yeah, the screen was so small they had to sell things that made your screen look bigger with magnifiers. Oh man, they didn't just release the Game Boy 6 Plus.
Right.
Oh my god. Yeah. You know, I first found out about it little before it was released. I must have been a Nintendo Power subscriber at that time, but it was in a Sears catalog because that's where I used to, you know, read about the video games because we always had one of those. And it said that the Game Boy was coming and there was a game called Super Mario Land. And I just remember thinking, this is the future. I was like, how do they do it? My Nintendo is this big. How are they going to do that in something that big? But at the time, but I didn't get a Game Boy for years because it was too expensive.
Oh yeah, I didn't get mine until Christmas of 93, I think.
Let's see, I was in sixth grade. We did a shopping thing for our class. I was in maybe fifth or sixth grade. We did a shopping thing for my class, so this would have been 1992 maybe. And we went to a store. I think it was maybe Shopko. Did people know Shopko outside of the Midwest? Maybe not. Let's say it was Kmart. Okay.
Oh, that's worse.
Okay. It was Shopko.
They're out of business now. Yeah.
What? Kmart's gone?
The Kmart in Eau Claire, I believe, shut down in February.
Yeah, but I mean, is the whole franchise?
Yeah, gone? Yeah. Oh yeah, they went bankrupt a long time ago.
What?
Oh yeah.
I mean, I knew they were not doing so well. Thanks, Walmart. Okay, anyway. Yeah,
pretty much.
Unless, Walmart, you intend to sponsor our podcast, in which case, thanks, Walmart. See how the tone was a little different?
Yeah, that was okay. Different.
Okay, anyway. But you know what? No, we're not going to do negative today. We always bring up, like, this is one of our pet peeves about gaming. Nintendo won't give us something, or right. Blah, blah, blah. No, today's topic is Game Boy is fun.
Oh, like not even was fun, is fun.
It is still fun. Oh my gosh. But anyway, getting back to the story, I went to the store and we had to, we did a shopping activity where we had to buy a certain number of items, whatever we wanted, but the total after tax had to come out to $100. Okay. Or as close to it as possible. Because I think we went for math class. I don't even remember, but you know, we were going. So I got the person behind the counter to pull out a Nintendo Game Boy. Oh, it was Prangyway.
Oh God.
Wow, that went out of business while I was still in America. Anyway, sorry. Got them to pull out a Game Boy, and then I just looked through the shelves indiscriminately, finding another product that would make up the difference. I didn't even care what it was. You know, it didn't matter. I was looking for something that cost like exactly like $7 and something cents, because the Game Boy was like $90. Okay. So I found a product. So I got within 3 cents of $100. And what I did was I was able to get a gift certificate. That was the prize for coming close enough. It was a $10 gift certificate. So I got the gift certificate, and that night I went back and I bought the Game Boy for $10 off.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That's how I got my Game Boy. But like my parents didn't understand the concept. They're like, you've already got a Nintendo, you know?
Right.
And I said, this is a Nintendo I can play in the car.
Yeah.
They're like, we don't go on many long trips. And I'm like, but we could now because we have Nintendo.
It's the only thing that was stopping us.
Yeah. Whatever. And then they're like, well, what's your brother going to play? And I'm like, he's 3 years younger. He can coloring book or something. I don't know. eventually, I think we did get two Game Boys like years later. Mm-hmm. We had two. But I remember, like, there was, of course, some disappointment that it was green and black screen. But, you know, even as a kid, I'm like, well, you know, what can they do? You know, it's the
right
there. But I had that Game Boy. I still have it. I still have it. I still have my original Game Boy.
Oh, me too. With the cover. Yep. For the Link port.
There was a cover for the Link port? Apparently, I don't still have mine.
Oh, no.
But it still works.
Well,
it still works. I can't. I mean, there's that thing for the Game Boy that like went through what? Like Desert Storm or something that partially melted.
Oh, yeah. The museum. Yeah. Yep.
That classic story. And I was like, oh, that's neat. But I can't think of anything else I have from that time that still works flawlessly. That's ridiculous that it still works.
Not like I remember, like, there's that very, very obviously displayed like dot matrix.
Yeah.
Thing on there, and
dot matrix with stereo sound.
Yeah. And like I keep thinking to myself, it's like, I think that's one of my printers had dot matrix too. It's like, well, that doesn't make any sense. So,
and it was stereo sound, but like the first thing I lost was the headphones. So most of my Game Boy experience was the one mono speaker.
Right, right, exactly. So, and I even had an add-on that battery powered add-on that, like, you know, plugged into the headphone jack so you could get stereo sound that way.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I had one of those, and it was really loud, like surprisingly loud.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had that. I think
loved that.
Yeah. That was awesome. My parents didn't like that so much.
But like I can't really explain why this system was so powerful to me, because it was not powerful, right? Like, it was definitely... Well,
doesn't it have a faster processor speed than the NES? I mean, technically...
Oh, I don't know. But
technically, it's only an 8-bit system, so, you know, you're comparing apples to oranges there. But it was like a 4.7, like a Z80 processor. So it had a faster processor than the Famicom, but not nearly as much graphic hardware.
I'm just thinking in terms of, like, you know, the Game Gear, right?
Yeah.
Or something like that, where it's like...
Oh, yeah. You know, the Lynx came out before the Game Boy.
Right.
Not long before, but it did. It beat it to market. And I remember reading at the time, there was a... Did you know there was like a Consumer Reports for Kids magazine called Zillion? Have you ever heard of this?
No.
It probably doesn't exist anymore, but our school library had it. And they compared the Lynx to the Game Boy. And they declared without any hesitation that the Lynx would do better because it was color and more powerful and had better sound and better graphics and only a slight bit more. I mean, of course, since this is the kids' version of Consumer Reports and not the real one, I guess they didn't have any adults working on the staff that would have noticed that the Lynx's batteries lasted about a minute and a half.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm still using the original game batteries I put in this thing in 1993.
Well, that's
okay. No, that's a lie. But it's not much of a lie though. Those four batteries would give you power for months.
Yeah, it took a real long time, and I had like a car charger thing. Not
oh, you
charger,
got one of those.
But
yeah.
You know. So and there was like a wall socket one I had too. So I was set. Basically, yeah. But I'm still trying to think of what attracted me so much to it. Those are like the measurable things. You can be like, oh, you know, that makes a lot of sense and be like logical about it. But my love for this system is not logical.
No.
So the only thing I can think of off the top of my head is that the whole pea green and black and super blurry motion stuff reminded me of my first gaming love, the Apple IIe.
You know, that might not be so far off. For me, Game Boy, what attracted me about Game Boy? The games had more value to me. Because
mm-hmm.
even if I had a terrible game, I'd play it like mad. Because, unlike the NES, for me at least, there was no rentals for the games for it.
Oh,
so
sure.
If I had bought a game, I'm stuck with it, you know?
Right.
And I had to do my research pretty well because I couldn't rent it to see if I liked it and then buy it. I had to, and that's why I wound up with games. Oh, man. I had Pit Fighter for that. Now, Pit Fighter was bad on every system, but the Game Boy one was especially bad.
Oh, dear. No, I was able to rent games because there was a place where I lived called Farmore, Pharmor.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was a chain of any kind, but we rented from lots of, you know, grocery stores back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
Mostly. But this place, I don't even know what else they actually sold, but I went there because they would rent out Game Boy games, and that's how I played a bunch of ones that I never had. And I remember like going there and going to the register and like my parents, I was like maybe 12, 12 I think when this happened. my parents, I must have been older than that because I had a Game Boy. Well, anyway, we go up to the cash register and they want like $30 for the game. It's like, well, we just want to rent it. It's like, oh, we don't rent anymore. I was like, well, why not? We're going out of business. And I guess it has something to do with like the owner was embezzling, or I don't remember exactly, but pretty hardcore, pretty sad. But that was the only, because like, you know, those games are so small, they're easy to like lose, and I can imagine not wanting to rent those out.
Yeah, and plus, I mean, people will take them on a trip or something.
Right, yeah, because you don't just like go home with them. They can go anywhere.
And that is why I'm having a Game Boy renaissance right now.
Oh, okay.
I am going through a Game Boy renaissance because I enjoyed my time with the Game Boy very much, but I had a very small selection of games. I had Super Mario Land 2, wonderful,
mm-hmm.
you know. Pokemon came out when I was too old for Pokemon in my mind.
Okay.
And I regret that now because I think I would have really liked a game like that when I was younger. You know, if it had come out 2 years before, this would be called Pokemon Dojo right now. I'm pretty sure that I would have gone nuts about it. But it happened during that time when I was trying to be a little more cool, but still playing video games. Wow, that didn't work out. Anyway.
I didn't have that problem. But when Pokemon came out, I played it for a bit, but I couldn't do it. Like, it was just too damn blurry. And this is like, it's like 1998, right?
Yeah.
I'm finally sick of this. I love my Game Boy to death.
Yeah.
Like the first game I ever owned for it was Link to the Past. Link's Awakening, I mean.
That was so, wow. You know, that might still be. I mean, I go back and forth about which was my favorite Zelda game, but it's definitely in the top three.
Oh,
maybe my favorite. It's definitely the one that I enjoyed the most at the time.
Well, I still love it.
What a great game.
I own a Japanese DX version of it. I own it on a virtual console, the DX version. I love this game. But I get to Pokemon, and I'm like, I can't handle this. And I knew that the color was out or coming out.
Yeah.
And I was working like my first real job and had money, and I just, with my first paycheck, I bought a Game Boy Color, and like how crisp it turned out to be, surprised. Yeah. Like, it honestly shocked me.
I never owned a Game Boy Color.
Oh no.
Owned a Game Boy Color because Game Boy Color came out. I went Neo Geo, suckas.
Mm.
I went Neo Geo Pocket. And if you play a fighter on that, and then you look at the Game Boy Color stuff, and you're like, nyeh.
Yeah, understandable.
Yeah.
But I was super pumped about like the color palettes and that whole thing. And I didn't own my own Super Game Boy, so this was my only chance to like to experience those games that way. And you know, I knew that we would have new games coming out that would take advantage of the hardware specifically.
That's one thing I didn't know owning a Neo Geo Pocket, but there would be new games coming out.
Well, I wouldn't send the power still. Like, I was still a big fan of that. Yeah. You know, no problem for me. But I couldn't go back after that. Like, I love that system so much, but I've never been able to play a game on that hardware again.
Well, I mean, right as I said, remember when I said I still have my original Game Boy, I had to dig it out because whereas it still works, I mostly play my Game Boy games now on the Game Boy Advance or on my Super Game Boy.
Sure.
On the Super Famicom. I guess I've always been more of a console gamer anyway, but the Game Boy Advance is a good way to play it too. Although I really need to get an SP. I don't have one right now. I've just got my old translucent purpley.
Oh geez.
Game Boy Advance.
There are SPs all over the States. Like, I actually my SP was a Japanese one.
Yeah.
Cuz they didn't have black in the US at the time, and I was in Japan for the first time, and that's when I got it. And there's a whole story about how I had to get an exchange because there was a problem with like a dead pixel or something. Long story. But regardless, something happened. Before I moved out of my first apartment in Madison, where, like, I opened it up one day and like just the screen was spiderwebbed, and something had struck it in the back pretty clearly.
Yeah,
I didn't know when that had happened, so that thing was dead, and I loved it so much. But I picked up a new one. Well, it's beat up and whatever, but for like $40, I want to say.
I need to get one. Although I still don't know why that's the one where they did the weird headphone adapter thing, right?
Yeah. So like the Link port is also the headphone adapter, so you can't use them both at the same time, I don't think. No.
I don't know. But either way, but I'm rediscovering Game Boy games right now because my what I played when I was a kid was limited to what I had and what my friends had, because there was whereas for my NES stuff, for my Famicom, I played hundreds of games because I rented one every week. But for this one, I was limited to what I had. So I am now picking up cheap Game Boy games.
Oh.
You know, I'm just picking up handfuls of them at places like Famicom Dojo or other game stores. I'm just picking up a bunch, and I'm going through them, and there are so many good games that I'd heard of but never played, or never heard of but are good.
Yeah.
And I'm just having the time of my life. It's because for Famicom at this point and Super Famicom, mostly, other than some stuff that's quite rare, I've pretty much played everything that I have much interest in happening. Remember how excited I was a few weeks ago when I found Hyper Zone?
Yeah.
Whatever, because it's rare for that to happen. But now with the Game Boy, every day I'm finding a game. What did I find recently? I found it's called Red Arima. It is a side story to Ghouls and Ghosts Makemura. It's a side story. It's called Makemura Gaiden. And to tell you the truth, I don't know if this was released in America or not. Something tells me it was, as like Gargoyle's Quest, maybe, or something like that. I don't know. Whatever it is, it's great, and it never hit my radar before, because I didn't have it, the store near me didn't have it, and none of my friends had it, so it might as well not have existed. I probably read about it in Nintendo Power, but that's where it ended.
Huh.
So I'm discovering all these amazing games. You know Kix, Q-I-X is the spelling. That game, it was an old arcade game.
No,
you try to like surround part of a picture. And meanwhile, they've got this thing that looks like the thing from the Windows screensaver, circa Windows 3.1, kind of moving around.
Okay,
that's the worst description of a game I've ever done.
Sounds like a terrible game.
You know, it's a great game. It's a great game. It's a Taito game. It's a hard game. I've played it in numerous forms on different systems, but I didn't realize that Nintendo took the publishing duties of it themselves when they did the Game Boy one, and Mario's in it.
Oh.
Mario's in Alleyway as well, which is a breakout cloner. You know, there's these special Game Boy versions of lots of things.
Mm.
And of course, we've mentioned my Picross addiction.
Oh yeah.
But there's just so many really, really good games. And I invite anybody who's into retro gaming right now to pull out the Game Boy again. Because you have so many advantages with the Game Boy. First of all, those cartridges are built to last.
Oh, for sure.
I picked up a Pokemon cartridge that looks like it had been run over by a truck, and it might have. It still works fine. You know, it's all scratched up and terrible. But I don't know. The plastic's really hard. They're a lot less brittle than a lot of systems games. The other thing is... not many of them actually used battery backup, so you don't have that to worry about as much. Most of them are more action-oriented, kind of old-school type things.
Right.
And because of that, also, pretty much if you pick up 10 random Game Boy games from Japan, 9 of them you'll be able to play.
Oh, sure.
Because the very few of them are text-heavy. Mm. Almost all of them are action-type games, or games that have stories but are not necessary to the game itself. And for those of you who are beginning learning Japanese, just starting learning Japanese, it's a perfect system because the resolution of the screen didn't allow for really complicated kanji to be written. So most everything's written in like kids' alphabet of like hiragana and katakana.
Okay.
So if you know, if you've had 1 year of Japanese, you can probably read, maybe not understand, but probably read, you know, the entire game's text.
Nice.
Tell me some of your favorite Game Boy games.
Oh well, yeah.
I mean, you've already mentioned Zelda.
Yeah. Metroid 2 was like. I came late to the party for that one because I played Super Metroid first.
Oh.
Okay, so I didn't understand what the story of what was happening here. And then I played Metroid 2, and like apart from the power set being interesting, like with the spider ball and stuff that you didn't see in other, you know, in Super Metroid. And despite the lack of map, which I got used to in Super Metroid as well, I was just blown away by this game.
Is it just me, or does that game feel really, really claustrophobic because of the size of the screen? Like, Samus takes up so much screen real estate, and the enemies just kind of come from nowhere.
Well, that was kind of a problem, right? That's why like Super Mario Land was such a weird experience, because they didn't really know how to proportion things. And...
Yeah. Oh my gosh! So I played it when it came out because one of my friends had it. I didn't own it, but Super Mario Land is weird.
Right.
Part of it's like a shooter, and the first time I squashed a turtle, I went to pick up its shell and it exploded. Oh yeah, they become bombs, and your fireballs are super balls, which are incredibly difficult to hit any enemy with, but can get coins, which apparently a fireball can claim coins now. that are in weird, weird places. It's such a different game. I know it's not, Miyamoto was not involved with it, and that's probably why it's a Gunpei game, I believe.
Oh, actually. Really?
So it's just way different, but it's weird different. It's like a alternate universe Mario.
I couldn't get over how small the question blocks were, you know?
Yeah, they're just, because they wanted him to take up like an equivalent amount of space as if it was a full TV. Yeah, and Mario's tiny too. Like, you get the mushroom and he's still too small.
Well, like you know, Super Mario World 2 like seemed to fix all of those problems. Or not my world, Super Mario Lands 2 fix all those problems. And it introduced Wario.
It was really weird to even imagine that they were on the same platform, because they looked like a total generational difference.
Right, just for sure.
Just ridiculous. But at the same time, the first Super Mario Land, because of what it was, is so charming. Because Super Mario Land 2 is a great game, but it's very much like Mario 3 Mario World, whereas the first Super Mario Land was totally its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a thing that anybody decided to continue in any way, but it was weird. Like, all the art, and it doesn't have Bowser in it. There's no Koopa. You know, It's really its own thing, and it's very cool because of that. But yeah, it's,
I loved maybe a little too much the pack-in game.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Like,
wow.
Out of all the successful pack-in games.
It on paper, it doesn't work. We're going to pack in a Soviet-developed puzzle game with our new Nintendo handheld. It doesn't make any sense that would be the one. But if they had packed in anything else, I don't know if the Game Boy would have been what it was.
Right. The music alone made that game, I thought. But, you know, the fact that was, I'm sure people have played puzzle games, especially Tetris.
Oh, yeah.
That you play for like hours and hours, and then like you close your eyes and try and fall asleep while all you can see are falling Tetris blocks.
Yep.
I mean, that's where that started with me, was that game. And there you go. Yeah. So my older son, like, I had that in my Game Boy Color. I think I still do, actually. He'll come into the room where all the games are, and he'll just turn that. He's like, I just want to hear the music. He doesn't even care to play the game. He just wants to hear the music.
Okay, I should turn this off. Sorry. No, but that's the addictive quality, and that's the thing. A lot of, and it was good and bad. Because for a lot of casuals, it was just a Tetris block, the Game Boy. Like, they never needed a game other than the pack-in. Originally, it was being debated about whether they were going to pack in Super Mario Land or Tetris.
Oh, God. I would have hated Super Mario Land.
But Super Mario... Yeah. It's kind of a... It would have been kind of a disappointment. But the Tetris was included with it. And it was a Game Link-compatible cable.
Right,
so
right. I think that was the important feature, yeah.
You could do that right away, and it was just so incredibly replayable. I think it was definitely the right choice. Do you know Japan didn't get a pack-in?
Oh, I'm not surprised, given not what I know of Japan's history now.
But Tetris is one of the best-selling games on the system. But it wasn't a pack-in. Same with Mario. It wasn't a pack-in in Japan. Yeah, so your pack-in was Tetris, but you know, later Game Boys, like you know, they had a Zelda bundle and stuff like that, and I thought, that's cool. Zelda's a great game, but what about Tetris? You know, how are these people going to play Tetris? Yeah. You know, because to me, a Game Boy without Tetris it doesn't even make any sense.
It's so weird too, because like no other version of Tetris I've ever played has come close to how much I enjoyed this one.
I have enjoyed the Tetris on DS very, very much, but there will probably never be another game ever that I have sunk as much time into as the original Game Boy Tetris.
Mm-hmm.
No, mm-hmm. I really think that's true. That is probably my most played game.
Wow.
Because I mean, I've had really long RPGs that I've played multiple times. You know, there's probably hundreds of hours, but Tetris on car trips and stuff, like just the sheer number of games I've played of Tetris. Game Boy was wonderful. Game Boy had a lot of really bad games, though. A lot of really, really bad, like licensed stuff. Because it was kind of seen its whole life as being a little kiddie. So, you know,
sure.
they made tons and tons of junk, but like, I don't know. For some reason, the junk seemed less junky on the Game Boy. I don't know why.
Yeah, that's true. Like I would not have played those games on an NES.
Yeah.
I can't explain why. It doesn't make any sense.
Krusty's Super Funhouse. It was a Simpsons spinoff, you know, Krusty from The Simpsons. And he was like a mouse catcher. It was a very, very strange game. I loved it. I played it a lot. I believe I beat it, even though it was quite hard. It was very similar to like a Lemmings type game or something, because the mice are moving around and you got to set traps and stuff.
Sure.
It was, but like, it's a game that I would have ignored on another system. I think it was released on the NES and the Super NES. Oh, did you notice that? First, when it came out, you had all these things that were like cross-ported, like NES to Game Boy, you know? Mm-hmm. And then Game Boy continued on into the Super Nintendo days. So then you had cross-generational, like, you know, you had Donkey Kong Country and Donkey Kong Land.
Yeah. And then Donkey Kong Land.
Yeah. And then in later years, it even like had eight-bit Game Boy versions of N64 games.
Conker's Pocket Tales. I think I bought that.
That came out quite a bit before Conker's Bad Fur Day. But you had your Killer Instinct port. Mm-hmm. Although that was on Super Nintendo as well.
Yep.
But like, you know, the thing lasted so long that it, you know, well, I mean, that's amazing. If you consider the iterations of it, you know, 1989 that thing came out, and it didn't get a color system till what, 98?
Yeah, yeah.
So you've already got, you know, 9 years of system right there.
And this is how long the system lasted, right? I wouldn't say pack in, but it was one of three options you can get with the GameCube. Like for $50, you can get like a game or a Game Boy player.
Yep.
And I bought my console day one, so I didn't get that deal, but I bought a Game Boy player. I mean,
yeah.
Why wouldn't you? You know? Yeah. And it also makes the GameCube an actual cube, so you have to buy it.
Yeah. 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 It would be ridiculous not to. It was popular enough that that weird GameCube that they came out, that Panasonic released, the Q,
yeah,
whatever, the one that had a DVD player as well. They made a special Game Boy player that would fit to it.
God, maybe that should have been my answer in the Denshimen we did last week was the Q, which I could have gotten, but I've never actually seen that Game Boy player in the wild.
It's hard. That's a hard one to get. Probably more expensive than the thing itself. I think you had to send in for it.
Oh God.
Because it wasn't a popular piece of hardware, but enough demand was there to play Game Boy games on a TV that they managed to make a version for.
That's insane.
We've got to do an episode about this, but like the various Super Game Boy things as well, and how they would add extra features, and just they just really squeezed a lot of life out of this thing that even when it was released in 1989 was technically inferior to the competition.
Right? Right.
But it kept on for, yeah, like 9 years before even releasing a color model. And then the color model, that didn't last very long before the Advance, actually. What? It had about 2 good years.
Yeah.
And then the Advance came out, but it still was fully backwards compatible all the way. Just amazing. And then the DS came out, and it was compatible with Advance, but not Game Boy. I guess that's where it ended.
Yeah, I mean...
Micro was not backwards compatible with Advance.
That's true.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, the form factor would have made that difficult. Yeah. But, like, I don't want to dwell on negativity too much, but like I always thought how kind of like BS the whole DS argument was. It's like we need a third pillar, and I didn't believe for a minute that was going to be, you know, a true.
Oh, nobody did. Nobody. Yeah, but
so I'm kind of mad at the DS for killing the Game Boy, but really it's just a Game Boy. I mean,
The DS is the new Game Boy, and frankly. I always thought I loved my Game Boy, but I always thought it was strange that it was called the Game Boy. Isn't that kind of an odd name for something?
It's a super odd name.
It's a really, really odd name. You see, we grew up with it, so it doesn't seem so odd. But like I was, you know, I was telling, you know, some of my students who didn't grow up through that about the Game Boy, and they're like, "Why is it called the Game Boy? Did girls not play it?" And
yeah,
I'm like,
"That's super sexist."
And I'm like, "Well, it's not even. I mean, in Japan, they're not using like." Like if we called something like Game-kun or something, you know, which right. applies to boys, or Game-chan, which would apply more to girls, not exclusively, but more so. You know, we probably would think that was okay, you know.
Yeah.
But in the U.S., it's strange that it didn't get retitled when everything else got retitled.
Right, right.
But you know, the DS is an extension of the Game Boy. I mean, that's all there is to it, And Nintendo still makes amazing portables, very, very good, but it's, I don't know, there maybe it was the age that I was, or maybe because it was the first of its kind. It wasn't the first of its kind, though, actually. There were portables with multiple cartridges before the Game Boy.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the first one I owned.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's just got such a special place in my heart, but Game Boy is something I hadn't really done for like 20 years, and I'm getting back into it now, and every day I'm finding a game that I hadn't played before, a new experience, and I am so, so happy right now. This is one of the high points of my gaming life, I gotta say, is just this whole treasure trove of games that I didn't know about or knew about but hadn't played, just suddenly coming into my lap. I'm sitting here at the desk in front of me right now. I have a stack of about 80 Game Boy games.
Nice.
I really need to find a way to organize them. I think I'm getting some kind of like recipe card boxes. One of our viewers sent in something that looked kind of like a tackle box with different dividers. I might do something like that. But either way, I just losing a lot of sleep, but playing a lot of games, a lot of really, really fun games. And they're the type of games I like. Simple controls. You can pick it up. You don't have to look at the manual. There's no tutorials. You're just in the game and you're playing the game. And I don't know. I'm really recommending to everybody right now, find your old Game Boy. It still works. If you can find it, it still works. Throw a fresh set of batteries in there and go to wherever still sells Game Boy games. And they haven't hit the inflation as much as other systems. They really haven't. You can still get lots of Game Boy games for under $5. Or go to Game Gavel. There's tons and tons of stuff right there. And what's great about Game Boy games is they're so light, the shipping is like nothing.
All right.
You know, if you're buying domestically, you can slip it in an envelope, you know. And if you're buying internationally, still, like, I can ship someone, like, 4 Game Boy games for, like, $5. And I can ship 10 Game Boy games for, like, $10, you know? You know, they're light, they're easy, and, how could we not mention Kirby?
Oh, God. Because we got running out of time.
Oh, because we're running out of time? Kirby was great there.
Yes. I honestly never played it actually on the Game Boy.
Oh, really?
Not really on the NES either. I was never really a huge Kirby fan.
Have you come back to it recently?
Nope.
Try.
Okay.
Probably Kirby's Dream Land was wonderful, and you can beat it in one sitting. It's very easy, but it's simple because you don't have any of the abilities or anything. I actually kind of liked it because of that. But if I was recommending a Kirby game for someone who hasn't played one before, grab Kirby's Adventure for NES or Famicom, and it's good and it's technically amazing. Like what kind of effects they were able to do with the 8-bit hardware. I mean, it's one of the latest games, so obviously it'll be advanced, but it's really, really good. It's got some of the places have animated backgrounds. It's amazing what they did with that. Yeah, replay Kirby, totally.
All right.
Did you do the 94 version of Donkey Kong?
No, but I hear that's a really good game.
I thought it was just kind of a straight up kind of remake of the you know, but I played it for the first time this week. I feel bad about it because that was the one the Nintendo Power was hyping from here to wherever, you know. I played it. It's so good. It's really, really good. It holds up really, really well. Play it on Super Game Boy, and you get the enhanced sounds and graphics too.
Oh gosh, that's a whole other topic right there. The Super Game Boy compatibility. Oh man, there's a lot of cool stuff happening there. Like we mentioned.
Oh yeah.
The Killer Instincts and Donkey Kong have certain features.
Space Invaders. Yeah. Okay. Let's do this. That'll be an episode, right? We're going to do an episode on this.
You mean like the podcast or the videos?
Let's go video, man.
Oh, God. Okay.
Let's go video. So look forward to that in 2015.
Or
wait, it's 16, 2015 now.
Or 17.
Oh, my gosh. We're living in the future. I was going to pick a date that was a couple of years in the future, and I chose 2015, not realizing that it is currently 2015.
It's already. We have to go back. Right. All right. Speaking of Back to the Future, let's do some future retro.
All right. You want to start?
Sure. So I have played a game I got for free. And you mentioned iOS before, right?
Yes. Yes.
So that's where I'm going with this, is that I was told by some of the 4CR MOOCs to get a game.
Okay.
And I downloaded it and didn't play it for weeks. And I was
like most of my gaming on the iOS. Yeah.
But I don't have a chance really to play
games,
mobile games at all, games of any kind really lately. Partly from doing a lot of the Famicom Dojo video work, but also because mobile stuff, I'd never have a chance to just sit down and play a mobile game.
Yeah.
So I was on a train to Texas recently for vacation. So right before we started the Winter Dojo, and I was just like, all right, I had nothing to do for a little while. I'm going to see what I have on my phone.
Okay.
And this game called Framed was on there.
Ah, okay. That's what you're good. That's the one you made me download, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes, yes.
So tell everyone about Framed.
Tell everyone about Framed. So I didn't know what to expect from this. Like, it looks very noirish, which appeals to me already. So I thought like adventure game, right? It's actually a puzzle game.
Oh.
But it's kind of an adventure game, right?
Like, okay. You beat it, right? At this point?
Yes, I beat it.
Okay. I just played it a little bit. So you've got basically comic book panels, right? That's what it's supposed to be?
Yeah. It's or like frame. Hence the name.
and the action plays out, and you have to put them in the correct choose your own adventure-ish order so that it actually plays out without you getting shot or
caught. That's the puzzle aspect of it is that you can't progress from a screen until you put all the panels in the right order.
Yeah.
So when I got that, I was hooked, basically. Like, I couldn't stop playing it, and I had to eventually because, you know, someone has to use the bathroom. But
gamer's dilemma.
But it's just so addictive, and there's a story there, right? Like, there's no dialogue. It's very minimalist.
Yes.
The music,
the animation is great.
The music is amazing. I'm pretty sure it's 3D animated. But like, it's done in such a way that it's all like cel shaded, so it looks like flat and 2D-ish. Like the motion is very smooth. I'm sure it was motion captured at least partially as well.
Probably how they did the animation in Ghost Trick. You played that. Have you played Ghost Trick?
No.
Boo. Okay.
I mean, is it just rotoscoped? I'm not even really sure how this works.
It looks too nice to have been traditionally sprite animated, but it looks like sprite animation.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, continue.
Sure. About the story, like there's not a lot going on. You start as this guy, with a briefcase and looking through some windows there, and there's like police cars, and he was trying to run away. And the general idea of the gameplay is that you are trying to avoid the police, but not just the police. You have who appears to be an accomplice, a woman, and then a guy who is trying to stop you. I'm not really clear on this point, but there's three other actors in this, and you switch off between these three characters during the course of the game, and all the while trying to avoid the police, until you get to, you know, what end exactly. I couldn't tell you, but I could tell you because I've beaten it. but there, you haven't beaten it. You said
I haven't. I haven't, but...
So I would not feel so bad about this if I just talked about it in general, but if you haven't.
Well, okay. Neither have our listeners.
True, but I don't care about them as much.
I just tell me. Okay.
There is a portion of the game where you get to, at least briefly anyway, replay the beginning of the game again.
Oh.
And it was so convincing at first that I wasn't entirely sure that I wasn't just playing the game over. But
you thought it maybe reset?
Yeah, well, like, you know, it was from what was happening, it was kind of obvious that was what was going to happen next.
Yeah.
But like, then it showed me like a different angle of a scene that I remembered seeing, and then it like had the same screen, but like there were different panels, and like where is this going? So I was super super into this idea. If I wasn't hooked by this game already, like that moment was when I really fell in love with it, because spoilers, it reminds me a lot of one of my favorite games of all time, Prince of Persia: Sands of Time.
Neat.
And it extends the game's life by like that much more. And it's really short. Like, I played it a second time, cause like after I beat it, I couldn't help but play it again just to compare what that repeat stuff was like, just so I can get an idea of what was different and what was the same. And like, I think the second time I beat it, maybe an hour and a half tops. But, it was so good. And I got it for free, but you paid for it.
I paid $5 for it.
Oh my God. That's like $1 million in iOS terms.
I remember I wrote to you that I paid $5 for it, and you're like, oh man, I'm sorry. And like, what's funny is like, $5 is like, hey, I got $5. I think I'm going to go throw it out in the street. Oh, I can get this game for $5? Okay. What's it like? You know, I mean, you know, but we've become this race for the bottom with mobile games has gotten to a point where $5 seems like a lot to pay for a mobile game, which is why this is my biggest case in point for why Nintendo shouldn't go mobile. Because people will be like, new Mario game? $10? No way. Right. You know, whereas basically, you buy a cart for $40 and, you know, that's your price of paying the game. You know, it's just expectations are so different. But no,
it wasn't so much that I apologized to you. Yeah. It was more that like I didn't know if you think it would be $5 was enough game for like a couple hours.
Well, listen, for a couple good hours, you know, that seems like a fair price to pay. You know, you'd pay what, like $9 to go see a movie, you know. And from what I've played so far, it looks like those hours are going to be quality, and it's a showpiece game. It's one you want to show other people, and I'll say it's the first time I've made a game purchase on iTunes for probably a year now.
Right. So I was happy to help you out after you told me that you were basically done with iOS. So,
you know, if experiences like this continue to be made, I can see myself now. But when you're playing it, didn't you think it would work really well on the Wii U with a gamepad?
Oh, for sure.
And what would be really cool
or a DS?
if I was remaking this game for the Wii U, I would have you still be doing the panel stuff on the screen, but on the television screen, those watching it watch how it plays out in a more full frame type of format. Looks like a movie going on that you're controlling.
Exactly, and that's the thing that's kind of like both great and I guess it could annoy people, but it didn't annoy me ever when I played it. Was that you have to wait for the scene to play out to get to the next screen. Like you can stop at any time to replay. If you feel like you're not going to make it, but you got to watch the whole thing play out until it's done.
Yes.
And even with that, it's only like an hour or so long. Yes. but it's so pretty. Like, I don't mind watching it.
Yeah, it's really nice. But I suppose it'd be boring for someone observing you playing it.
Well, maybe.
Maybe not. But either way, developers, if you're listening, there's not many games that I would say are great from mobile to Wii, but that one I think would work really well.
I think I could have played this game for longer than a couple hours, but I can imagine how much effort it was just to make as much as they did.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
But I think the mechanic that was really good and that would hold up. And there were a lot of ideas. I don't know how far you got, but there were a lot of different ideas for how, because instead of just like swapping panels, you can rotate panels. There's a hot swapping section later on where you can reuse ones you've used already before. And it's like, who made this comic book? It was a comic book about how comics, like how they work, like how they warp time and space and our perceptions, how we're even able to understand them at all. And like it's like a comic book about comic books, and I can't remember the name of it. I know someone on Facebook who I should contact to let me know, because he actually lent it to me to read once. It like takes those ideas about warping time and space basically and makes that into a video game, and it's just brilliant. Like that mechanic alone was made me love it, but the fact that it was just artfully done as well just set me over the top. So it's on iOS, $5, get it.
Yeah, totally. Okay. I've got a game. It's also a portable game.
Oh,
Going along with our Game Boy theme. It's also about $5.
Oh dear.
And it is called Quarth.
Quarth.
Yep. Quarth.
Okay.
Quas. I don't know. I don't know how they pronounce it in Japan. Okay. It's by Konami. And it's a, what would I call it? A Tetris Omup.
Okay.
It is a puzzle shooter. And it's really good. And I feel ashamed that I had only discovered it this month. Because it was on tons of formats. It was on everything. It was on Nintendo. It was on the Famicom, and it got US releases, and it was on the Game Boy, and it was on the MSX, and it was on everything. But I guess I remember seeing it at stores or in the magazine. It didn't look particularly that interesting. But what it is you've got falling blocks, and what you have to do is use your gun to shoot more blocks at them, causing the geometric shapes to complete, in which case they'll leave. And of course, you can make it more difficult to get bigger scores by making the shapes larger by adding larger sides to them. And there's various power-ups you can get. But it's Tetris blocks are coming down, and you've got to complete them to clear them that way.
Huh.
It's fun. It's really fun. And it must have come, I mean, it must have been a response to Tetris, because the artistic style looks, you know, too similar for it to be coincidental.
Sure.
It's just really fun. And I really want to get another Game Boy and some kind of link cable so I can try the multiplayer mode, because I can imagine that would be really fun. Apparently you can play either as versus or co-op. Sure. So I'm very interested to see how that went, and I actually haven't played it on any other systems, but now I'm going to try to track down the MSX and the Famicom versions to see how those are. But I mean, it's aged pretty poorly graphics wise and sound wise, although I think the tune is catchy enough. But you know, it's I think it was a launch title or very soon, you know, very, let's see, it says on here 1990, so it's within the first year of Game Boy. I haven't played it a ton yet, but I can, but it's a game that I find myself coming back to.
Sure.
One of those, like, ah, I got a couple of minutes, I'm going to play some Quarth, you know, in the same way that Tetris was for me growing up. So it's so cheap if you want to get it. Like, I think on Game Gavel or eBay right now, you can definitely get a cartridge for less than $5. And if you throw a couple other games in there, you know, it's probably less than $5 even shipped, you know.
Sure.
So I recommend that one. Or probably, I don't know how common it is. I do remember seeing it when I was a kid at various game stores. So you might try locally as well to see if you can pick up a copy. But super fun.
Nice.
Super fun. I know Future Retro is supposed to be games that are classics or would be classics, but the world has forgotten about Quarth.
For sure.
Because it never got a sequel. It never really went anywhere. But it's a fun little game that I probably would have totally loved as a kid had I given it a chance.
Right. I don't think this is not familiar to me at all. So new to me. So I think it counts.
Yeah. See if you can track down a copy. I know the Game Boy one came out in the States. MSX, I'm guessing not. It probably had a few computer versions, and I'm not sure if the Famicom one got an NES release or not. I'll have to check into that, but I think I might even have a copy of the Famicom card if I can dig it out.
I'm happily looking for things to buy right now because I'm going to be at Midwest Gaming Classic.
Ooh, that's a good place. That's a good place.
So I'll keep my eye out for that. But I usually have some things I want to find, like the last few years has been stuff for the show.
Yeah.
And this is one of those strange times when I don't really have anything in particular I'm really looking for. So if anyone has any suggestions, please bring those up. More future retro or just retro classics.
Cool. Have you played any of that PC Engine since we talked last time?
Maybe we should look for some of those games too.
Play the ones you have first. Play the ones you have.
Yeah, but I need Bomberman or something. I'm missing
you
something.
You have Bomberman.
What am I missing?
You're definitely missing the East series. You should get that.
You told me to pick up some stuff, and I should.
That was
in an audio bonus, which you should go to our website to listen to. If you go to famicomdojo.tv/podcast.
That's true. That was cut out of our episode, wasn't it?
It was. But
so yeah, listen to that. Listen to me advise Sean on what he should buy and contribute towards that. Yes.
You know you want to.
Oh yeah.
Because I want to. So, all right, I guess that's all the time we have for this week. But Winter Dojo is still going strong. So, as of this week, we've released an episode that, well, I guess we can say what it is because everyone's watched it, right? Duck Hunt. Yeah. I've really wanted to get this one out a lot sooner than it did, but for various reasons that didn't happen. But We spent a lot of time, put a lot of love into this one, and even went back and reshot some things when we realized, well, we didn't really explain much about the thing we were talking about, did we? So
yeah. And for those of you who don't like the sound of my voice, I'm not in that one.
Oh, that's true. Oh dear. But
although I did contribute a little bit to the research. No? Maybe.
Yes.
That's... Oh yay.
Because talking to you is why we realized, oh, we didn't really explain a lot. There's a lot of other stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So, yep. We'll talk more about that in the Denshi Mail.
Yep.
That's coming up next week, I'm sure. But sure. So, anything else before we head off into the great blue yonder?
I feel like we've talked about Game Boy for, like, a long time, but didn't even scratch the surface of how many absolute classics there are. So I'm just really hoping that in our comments, both on the website and on Facebook, you guys will tell me about the Game Boy games that you played and enjoyed and loved. Because right now, actually, I'm looking for those new experiences. And I'm in a ridiculous and potentially expensive collector mood right now. But please help my enable my addiction and tell me what games I should be picking up.
Awesome. Cool. All right. Well, then I guess until next week, the dojo is...
The dojo can fit comfortably in a large-sized jeans pocket.
Yeah.
Have you ever noticed the Game Boy? It's supposed to be a pocket system, but unless you had jeans with like a really quite large pocket in the back, there's no way you could fit that in your pocket.
Take that, iPhone 6 Plus.
Goodbye.
Famicom Dojo.
If you enjoyed this episode, please visit our show notes at famicomdojo.tv and leave a comment. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or our RSS feed. Rate and leave a comment on our free iTunes storefront, or call us at 608-492-1923 to share your thoughts. Follow Famicom Dojo on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube to train your game. And visit littlepodcast.com to sponsor an episode or listen to any of the other great shows on the Little Podcast Network.